Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is Nancy from San Diego.
Blow it up a bit here. All right, Nancy, alcoholic.
And,
thank you to the committee, not in my head. And I'd my sobriety date is March 4th, 1993. And they tell us to tell it was what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And I like to do things ass backwards, so I want to tell you right now that the way it is now is a lot different than it used to be. That today I have a job, and when I came in here, I didn't. Today I have my health, and when I came in here, I didn't. I was in a relationship, but not really. You know how that goes. And now I really am in a relationship. And some days he's my significant other, and some days he's my SOB. So that makes him quite the man. We've been together 12 years, and he really has been a gift. And today I own a house with him, and we own dogs and have a garden and quite the picket fence and the whole nine yards. And if anybody told me that coming in, of course, I would not have believed them. So I am a miracle, and I'm happy to be amongst many miracles in this room tonight. So what happened for me was I was born into a very nice family, middle class. Washington, D.C. was my birthplace. And I have no externals that I can blame anything on. I guess if I was to pull up one thing from my childhood, I would have to admit there was sexual abuse, which doesn't help anybody, I guess, growing up. But other than that, I had both my parents, and I had a brother, and a dog, and 2.4, you know, on and on. Okay. And for me, my drinking, my psychiatric problems, my drug use, everything kind of dovetailed very quickly around 11, 12 years old. And I don't honestly remember my very, very first drink. I do know that in one of my very first drinking episodes, I drank so much that whoever I was with had to put me in a bathtub of cold water to bring me out of it. And I just remember sucking down whiskey like it was water. And I do remember very vividly my first beer and joint together, and that was powerful. And I also started into, along with all the drinking, I started into chemicals and had a few bad trips, had a few good trips. and this was all within 11, 12, 13, 14. I think that, honestly, my first drug of choice was glue, which allows me to speak poorly tonight. If you're unimpressed, it's probably because I did a little too much glue, but that's the truth of it. And then I was on my merry way. I developed, along with this, I was diagnosed for what they called adolescent schizophrenia, and I was well on a road to self-mutilation and really did not care. That was well imprinted into me by the time I was certainly 15. So jump ahead a little bit. I had ran away from home with a married man when I was 17. They wanted me in a psych ward. I refused to go. I said that that's not where I belong. I already got my brother in a psych ward. That's not going to be my life. And I feel that the rest of my days up until sobriety were really about chasing away, running away from all of that, you know. I was going to be different, and I was. My brother didn't have a drunk and alcohol problem, but I did. And so I ran away with a married man, and when I started going to bars alone, he didn't trust me, and he dumped me. And And I had, in the course of that relationship, a year and a half, 2 years, I had developed an eating disorder as well. And so now I was drinking tequila constantly, doing what drugs I could, you know. I was actually more heavy into alcohol at this point. And self-mutilation. And now I had developed an eating disorder in which I starved myself to 500, 750 calories a day. And then I got really smart. I don't know if any of you had these bright ideas, but this was one of mine. I decided that if I was going to only be allowed 500 to 750 calories a day, that it really should be in liquid form. And so I went from that to losing this relationship to, you know, hanging out at the bars to meeting really high-class guys. And I moved into a relationship with an ex-con. And he'd been in for attempted murder and bank robbery of a cop. Actually, yeah, a little bit heavier deal. And he thought I was pretty cute, so he decided he wanted to take me out. And I said that, well, the only way I'm going out with you is if you get me high. And so then I kicked up my quota a little bit and moved into IV drug use. And I went through 3 jobs in a matter of 4 months. I had actually been in college, but, of course, that didn't last long. I bombed out. I then had an opportunity to go overseas, and so I took advantage of that and proceeded on with my heroin use and my arrangements with men. So I didn't have to really pay for any of my drugs. And I don't know where to stop and where to begin. I don't even know my time here. So let me jump ahead a little more. I came back from Afghanistan. Actually, I came through Turkey, and I was I had my own little stash of heroin. And it was I landed in Turkey with my little stash right about the time that Midnight Express came out. Remember that year? Yep, that was me, only they didn't catch me. Now, that's got to be one of the stupidest things, really the stupidest things I ever could have possibly done. But I was not in touch. I was not a social butterfly, mind you. You know, I had maybe one friend in those 10, 15 years, and I might have had, you know, one guy at a time if I was lucky, you know, kind of thing. And so I got back to the States. I got really sick. I went down to 85 pounds. I stuttered. I could not sit on my own ass. It was too bony. I was really in bad shape. And I also had been hemorrhaging when I was overseas and had never gone to the doctor about it. So when I got back, I was probably suffering from a miscarriage or something, you know. So who knows, you know. I had 4 D&Cs before I was even 30 years old. So I was kind of beat up in that sense, too. And self-mutilation continued. This is all kind of goes along with it. And went through some more relationships, drinking, drugging, you know, pot smoking. And, you know, I have to tell you right now that I stand up now and, you know, 3 of my significant relationships, as in men that I actually lived with, they're dead today from this disease, and they're really my legacy, and I do consider myself a gift that they were, in their own right, helpful, very helpful in getting me here, and it also keeps me humbled as to what this disease can do, and that I was right there beside them, you know. I don't know why, you know, whatever, but... So when I got sober, I don't know where to start. It wasn't my worst bottoms. It wasn't the IV drug use. It wasn't the severe sickness. It was, you know, it's amazing. None of the what would be considered really dark bottoms were the point for me. Laying in bed for 2 months with pelvic inflammatory disease, whatever, didn't matter. What got me was when I got to California, I did this major geographic, didn't know a soul out here. I'd come up from Massachusetts, living in my car, you know, loving the street guys, you know. Just, you know, not all there. 35 years old, and all I had was my car and a few belongings and, you know, just nothing. And drinking, kind of got cleaned up on the IV because, you know, I got so sick. And I have Hep C today, and I probably had it then, but I didn't necessarily know it. And so anyway, I got out here, and basically, like they say, I got so sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was on my 19th round with a psychiatrist trying to figure out what diagnoses I had this time, because I'd already collected 6 diagnoses. And I believed them all. I mean, why shouldn't I? You know, nobody was addressing the drug and alcohol as much as the psychiatric. So the So I ended up in a therapist's office because I couldn't stop crying. And I must have cried for the first 3 years of my sobriety. I mean, it started a year before, and it just continued for 3 years after. And nothing really happened except that I remember this one night that was really powerful for me, and that's I was sitting in my apartment, and I was going to go. I was laughing, thinking about it. I was going to go to Pal Joey's. Now, for anybody that used to go to Pal Joey's, I don't remember you, all right? But I was going to go to Pal Joey's, and I didn't have a problem drinking alone, obviously. And so, but I was sitting there getting ready to go out by myself that night, and I swear, I mean, okay, I was granted, they called me schizophrenic, and I did hear voices, but this one was, you know, seemed pretty authentic. And it was basically that if you go out, you will die tonight. I mean, it was just like, I can't explain it. It was just so powerful for me. And that was a real turning point. And I spent my first 3 years with the help of Eskimos, my therapist, who thought this, you know, I should go into AA and stuff. And my first 3 years at a day treatment for women, I practically lived there. I'd lost my job. I got fired. And so my first year, I didn't work, and I just lived at the women's center. And at the time, I did a lot of dual diagnosis meetings for psychiatric and substance abuse, alcohol. But, you know, today I don't identify with those meetings. I don't need to go to those meetings. I love AA. Thank you. You'll see me in many meetings, and I thank you very much.